Rockies have a guy named Hamlet Marte.
Hamlet Marte?
No, but that's
awesome. Yeah, he's a catcher.
No. Of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett and Craig, how have your lives been since we last saw each other at Craig's wedding?
They've been good, I think.
I like that Brett's answering for me.
Well, I addressed it to both of you.
It's true. I went to Hawaii for 2 weeks, which was wonderful.
Craig, do you think that your delayed response time there is due to the ring weighing you down a little bit?
Yeah, it makes up a massive proportion of my body weight now. So.
Well, it must be quite the ring. Does it have its own gravitational pull? Or?
Yeah, well, I needed something to counteract my previous gravitational pull, so.
Yeah, well, still got the good face, though.
Yeah. And
the photos.
It's a good face is what got us here in the first place.
Yeah, photos will prove that, I think. So, welcome back to Tino. We're aware that it's been just a little bit of time. However, not as much time as passed during the last offseason. So, really, I think we have to leave it as...
There is no offseason.
True, except for death. The offseason is the enemy, and the enemy always wins.
Always wins. That's a good point.
So we are going to be playing a little bit of catch-up tonight on Tino, and I don't know why all of a sudden I'm talking like Pert Hapley, but tonight on Tino, we'll be playing on this podcast catch-up about baseball. So we're going to start with some listener emails, and then for this Tino and the two Tinos following it, we're going to tackle two divisions at a time and just talk about prospects who have dramatically enhanced their value or have seen their value decline over the past year, which is pretty much the only dynasty news we can talk about at this time of year because all our dudes are done playing. So we'll kick it off with our first reader email in quite a while. And this reader email is from Dan. And Dan asks, I'm sure you'll cover it anyway, but what are your thoughts on Shohei Ohtani's apparent imminent arrival? Will anyone let him hit and pitch? And which would you prefer to see him focus on? What level of impact do you think he'll have as a first-year player? Most of the time, questions we get about foreign players who are not going to be eligible for the majors anytime soon are not answered because, you know, who cares? But I think given the Ohtani news, this is pretty relevant. And for all questions like this, and basically all questions in general that require more than five sentences, we go to Brett.
So... The fun thing about Ohtani and where he's going to end up is that because of the way free agency works now for international players, both in the minor league system and in the major league system, Ohtani is mostly going to be able to choose what team he plays for. There are going to be not every team, obviously, because there are some teams with penalties if he actually does come over. But there are a number of teams that will be able to offer him a very similar amount of money, which will be extraordinarily low compared to his talents. So it's a scenario we haven't seen before. And one that makes me still skeptical that he's going to come over at all this offseason. But I think he's going to use some of that leverage to find a team that will let him hit and pitch. At least the stuff that I've heard, that's what he wants to do. To be honest, for his fantasy value, you kind of want him just picking one and and sticking to it. He could be a very good fantasy player, both as a hitter or a pitcher. I think he's the rare case, though, where and this is the exact opposite of what we talked about with Brendan McKay coming out of the draft, is that Ohtani is actually more valuable as a pitcher than as a hitter in fantasy leagues. And that's not to say he wouldn't be a good hitter if he was allowed to do so, but I think we're talking about someone who is maybe a top 40 to 50 hitter if he hits sort of at ceiling. He's got power, but he's, I don't think he's going to be a terribly high average hitter. As a pitcher, though, I mean, he could pretty easily be a top 10 pitcher if he's over here, and we're shifting into an environment where with all of the offense now, good pitching is more valuable than it used to be, and that there's no guarantee that'll continue, but it's certainly trending in that direction. So he's going to be valuable no matter what he does, unless he tries to do both and succeeds at neither, which I don't think is going to be the case. But I hope he's a pitcher and hope he comes over at all, because he's really fun to watch.
Yeah, just a couple comments. Well, one of which is a question for Brett. But the comment would be, I would give some pushback on a top 10 pitcher. I don't think he has nearly the track record of health to log enough innings to accomplish that ranking, even if the rate stats are really good. And number two, I think that I think part of that is that it could lead him to be a reliever. But my question, I guess, is how are fantasy leagues themselves going to handle someone if he does hit and pitch? Like, right now, pitcher hitting stats are obviously ignored. Are they just going to create like a flex position, just have two Shohei Ohtanis, one on offense, one as a pitcher? Like, how are leagues going to handle that specifically?
That's how I think they're going to have to do it. And, part of me really wants him to do both, because I want to see this break our general fantasy system. Because it would be really interesting to see what would happen. But yeah, I think you would have to have two player cards and two, but then you can, if you have two player cards, you get into situations where you could draft Ohtani and then trade the pitcher version of him and keep the hitter. You can get all kinds of weird stuff happening with that. So I honestly have no idea how they would handle it. And it would just be a mess.
That sounds right to me.
All right, so we'll move on to our second reader email. Oh, look at that. There aren't any. There are literally no other good reader emails from September. The second best reader email from September is from Tina. And Tina says, "Dear friend, how are you? Wish you a happy time. This is Tina from Story of Love Cosmetics, perfume manufacturer. Are you interested in perfumes? Looking forward to hearing from you. Best regards, Tina." Craig, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much does it aggravate you when people quantify their regards at the ends of emails?
I feel like it's a binary thing. Like, I don't think we need to modify it high or low. Either you have regards or you don't.
Yeah, no one is like, "Shitty regards, Tina. Buy my perfume."
Mild regards. How do you feel when people, I mean, it's not just quantify, but, it's like warm regards. How do you feel about those?
I can't comment on that publicly.
Yeah. Okay. We'll save that for after the show.
Yeah, exactly. Not a fan. Spoiler alert, not a fan. All right. Well, with that robust reader email section out of the way, we will move on and get down to some prospect talk. So, as I said in the opening, we're going to touch on two divisions in each of the next three shows, including today. And we're going to start where, all the prospects are the hottest, and that's in the AL West. So no real structure here, which will shock all our long-term listeners. Just going to sort of go through the division and each bring up a few guys who we you know, feel have strongly bolstered or strongly taken steps backward in terms of their stock. So, Craig, we'll start with you, and you can take this in any direction you want to go.
Okay. Oh, I'm just, wow. Really no format. Wow.
A lot of freedom. Lot
Warmly lax format, I think.
Yeah.
Is what, yeah. I mean, I think I'll start off with a relatively obvious name in Houston, but he's someone who I think has dramatically moved up his timetable, which I think adds a lot of value. And to be interested on your and Brett's take on that, given you guys do the prospect list, but Forrest Whitley at AA already. We've had guys see him in the field on the prospect team side, and the reports that they saw in low A didn't really just match up with kind of what we've seen and the numbers that we've seen him post. But I believe in the high end of those interpretations, that the curveball could be a double plus pitch in time. The fastball is obviously already there. I mean, I guess just the biggest thing to me is that he's already in double A. It was not something I expected. When you get a 6'7 high school pitcher, you kind of expect more of the Tyler Glasnow path to the majors in terms of taking a while to find their mechanics, find their rhythm, and be able to repeat well enough to control the ball. That none of that's an issue with Whitley. So I guess, Brett, is Whitley moving up a lot in your eyes in terms of rankings, or is it basically the same issue that he's a pitcher, there's a lot of risk with pitchers, and whether he's at low A or double A doesn't really move the needle that much?
I mean, it's both. He'll certainly move up among pitchers, and my guess is, you know, and Ben and I haven't sat down to really crack the 101, the Dynasty 101 yet, but you know, he's gotten to the point now where he's a pitcher who's probably a lock to be in the top 50, which is saying a lot when you consider how much we hate pitchers in dynasty leagues. So yeah, I mean, Whitley certainly improved his stock a ton, and you know, the fact that he's in double A is great news for his ETA, and that's better news for his risk level, just because you know, there's the school of thought that pitchers only have so many pitches to throw before they break, and the quicker Whitley moves through the minors, the more of those pitches that will be in the majors before he inevitably breaks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other point I'd make is that I think he does belong in that kind of top 50 that you're talking about, because I think he has number two upside. I tend to agree with Ben, and I found his article on it really convincing a few years ago about mid-rotation pitchers and how they work out, especially for fantasy. But I think Whitley's ceiling is above that. So he does. So it makes sense to have him in that kind of strata, in that echelon, I should say.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm going to take a turn and stick with the Astros and talk about a guy I'm pretty sure we've all been pretty high on, but I think Brett and I got especially aggressive on him heading into the season, and that's Kyle Tucker. And this is an interesting case of, if you were just to take a quick look at his stat line, you might think he'd actually taken a step back from 2016, because he hit .339 in 2016 in a really small sample in high A, and he was quite good in single A as well. And then if you look at his double A stats this year, he's down to .265. He's not getting on base quite as much. But the big question for him was always power, not about his hit tool. And he really came out this year and hit for even more power than my optimistic sort of prognosis would have had him hitting for this early in his career. So Tucker was able to mash 25 homers between high A and double A this year. And while the batting average was, you know, quote unquote, only in the 270s between high A and double A, that is a really good sign for someone who's bad, I believe, in as much as I do Tucker's.
Yeah, he's. I think he's repaying our faith, and I think he's going to return it in scores in the coming years. I think Tucker's going to be a, you know, a consistent power speed guy who can hit for, you know, a reasonable enough average. to actually help you. And you know, now that he's spent a half season, you know, more than holding his own at Double A at 20, I think there's a pretty good chance that we end up seeing him next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough lineup to crack, but either he's good enough to either force the issue in Houston or be used as their, you know, trade chip to land a huge, huge player. So I agree with you that, you know, I would have had 2018 as a pretty optimistic timetable as recently as 2016. I would bet the over at this point.
Yeah, Brett, I agree with that. So, Brett, who's your guy?
I'm going to talk about someone who gets talked about a lot, and in a cruel twist, I'm actually going to pour some cold water on a big lumbering first baseman.
Weird.
So let's, yeah, I know it's a real departure. So let's talk about Yordan Alvarez for a minute. Alvarez was a he still is. He's 20 years old. He turned 20 this summer. He spent the first part of the season, the first like month and a half, absolutely destroying the Midwest League. He had an 11.25 OPS. He was slightly not old for the level, but he wasn't, he was 20. He wasn't super young. He had experience playing in Serie Nacional in Cuba. So in terms of 20-year-old prospects, he was reasonably experienced, and I think he took advantage of that to against low A pitchers. He got to high A and hit a little bit of a wall. He had a 722 OPS over the rest of the season, and really just stopped hitting for power. Yeah, Alvarez is a big guy. I think his best chance to provide fantasy value is to get to that power at the highest level. I don't think it's going to be more than, you know, maybe 20 to 25 home run pop, which for a first baseman who is not going to hit for a ton of batting average, that's really just not a big deal anymore. I mean, Reese Hoskins could hit that many home runs in a month, so, you know, everything's relative. But yeah, Alvarez, I think everyone's cooled on him a little bit since the hot start, but rightfully so. It's I don't think he's a guy who is a top 101 prospect at this point, and he's got a little ways to go to become one in my book.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I'm going to throw out one more Houston name just really quickly. He was on the top 10 list that we had last year, and I know people were kind of excited to see him as a breakout prospect, but Miguel Angel Sierra had about as bad a year as you could have. In 57 games at Tri-City in the Penn League, New York Penn League, he had 178, 260, 297. So Yeah, not great. I mean, he's 19. He was 19 this year. Not necessarily someone you're going to give up on, but the reports that I received on him were not much better, and they were already kind of telling people to. I had people saying, "Calm down on Sierra heading into the season," because it was, you know, he had a really nice year at Greenville in the Abbey League last year, and it was just something that somebody that was kind of on the tips of people's tongues or the back of their mind, whatever. Someone to keep an eye on. I wouldn't say give up completely, but obviously there's not much to see right now. You can certainly wait on him as a name.
Yeah, and I'll throw one more name out. I'll do a quick bit on Freudis Nova, who is one of the Astros' big J2 signings from 2016. He's playing the Dominican Summer League this year. He's just toolsy as fuck, and he is a I like him a lot as a potential complex and short season breakout guy next year. It'll be his first year in the States. He'll be at 18, and I think he could really make a name for himself heading into a full season ball.
So if we pop over to the next team, I mean, there's not really anyone to talk about other than Kyle Lewis. And there's not really a lot to say about Kyle Lewis other than he can't stay on the field. So, Brett, you know, when it's 2 years in a row like this, the same injury, what does that do to a guy's fantasy value in your mind? You know, how much are you planning on docking Lewis heading into our rankings this offseason? Because I know you were fairly high on him. You know, not crazy so, but fairly high on him heading into 2017.
Yeah. It's gonna be noticeable, you know, and not because Lewis has inherently done anything wrong while he's been on the field, but you know, it's really hard, especially as a college bat that was not quite as polished as you might expect a college bat to be. It's really hard to lose that much developmental time in your first 2 years in the pros, and he's just going to continuously be playing catch up. Honestly, part of it is due to the organization. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot of faith that the Mariners will give him the kind of environment to overcome this this adversity that he's facing. He's still certainly a top 101 prospect for me, but I think he's certainly in the back half, and you know, I think we need to see him at least stay healthy for a continuous period of time in order to get much more excited about it.
Yeah, I think in addition to that, he the reports on him when he was on the field were that he was his gait seemed different than when he was healthy, and so that's just something to keep an eye on as well as we kind of track his return. And the only other name really in the Mariner system, Nick Neidert. He had a sub-3 ERA in 100-plus innings in high A. He's still not someone you need to worry about. Even with Safeco as his eventual home, I don't think he comes close to missing enough bats long-term to really be someone worth investing in.
Yeah, this whole system is just really brutal. The only other person I'll throw out as someone to watch is, and I do hate pitchers, but is Sam Carlson, who's the Mariners' second round pick from last year. I would not be surprised at all if Carlson was the number one Mariners prospect by the end of next season.
Yeah, he throws very hard. He's very good.
Damning with faint praise.
Yeah.
Craig, do the Angels have two full real prospects?
They do. Actually, that's kind of been a discussion. We're already in list discussion over on the prospect team. And one of the ones everyone who's listening to this podcast knows I love Jamai Jones with all my heart. Joe Adell has a decent chance of being the Angels' top prospect when we produce our top 10 lists. And I'm still arguing in favor of Jamai Jones, but there's plenty of risk on both sides. They're both really athletic outfielders who need to work on, you know, making contact and not striking out too much. But Adell is one of those hyper athletes that I think get the raw label, and he is relatively raw, but he took to baseball better than people anticipated from the amateur side. And so that's something to really watch for, because those are the type of guys that can really take off on you. I mean, it wasn't a first-round pick, much less a top 10 selection. But, you know, I think back to Matt Kemp as a Dodger was one of those really raw, really good athlete guys. And he showed up in camp and everyone was like, oh, he's actually got more baseball skills than we anticipated. And he flew through the minors. I think you could say this. Brinson didn't really, you know, fly through the minors. But he had the same type of thing where he was more athlete than baseball player. He shows up, everyone says, oh, wow, he's more of a baseball player than we thought. And then he's, you know, he's been a top prospect for a long time now. So I think that's something, you know, at least keep in mind with Joe Adell.
Yeah, I love that. Brinson was the name that I was going to bring up too in that exact example, just because I think it's really instructive, because we do, you know, it's easy to find these players that are playing, you know, bad competition in high school, or they're playing in bad conferences in college, and say, oh, they're raw. They're gonna take a little bit longer. You know, especially if they've you know, the type of raw tools that Adele has. And to be fair, not too many prospects have the raw tools that Adele has. But it's a good reminder that even though you think these guys might take a little bit longer, you don't know until they start playing pro ball. And sometimes they do surprise you. But you know, I know you love him, and I know that while you were a little bit more vocal a little bit earlier than me, I'm extremely high on Jamai Jones. He just turned
20. There's plenty of room on this train.
Just turned 20 a month ago, and he spent the last 2 months in high A. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a California league,
he hit
300. He showed power. He's got speed. He's everything you want to see in an outfield prospect. And
27 stolen bases this year.
Yeah. And the nice thing about both, and this goes for Jones and Adele, is that the Angels system is complete shit. And their veterans get hurt all the time. So they're not just going to sit and they're also trying to win. So they're not just going to sit and twiddle their thumbs while these guys are developing in the minors. They are going to call on them as soon as they think they are ready. And Jones is certainly not at the point where he could sniff the majors next year. But, you know,
you say that, but if they want to be aggressive, if he's got 40 games in high A right now, if they wanted to push him and start him in double A, then you're not that far, you know?
You're really not, but I think it's realistic. I think given his path, I think it's realistic that we could see him in a pretty decent role in 2019. So, I'm very excited about Jamai Jones. I'm probably going to really annoy Ben with where I want to put him on the 101.
Almost certainly. I feel like that's if you could do Bovada for Tino ranking arguments, that would be a really good that'd be a good one to take.
The only other guy who I want to talk about is Matt Theis, just because I wish he had power, or that the Angels would stick him back at catcher. I mean, he's got 412 on base percentage at double A. If he could even hit 15 home runs, I think he's a mostly everyday major leaguer, but I just don't think that's going to happen. And that makes me sad.
Yep. Only you. So we'll move on to Oakland and try to pick up the pace a little bit here, since we have a second full division to get through. You know, just like Brett really went out of his comfort zone to talk about a powerless – pudgy is not really fair for Theis, so we'll just say a powerless first baseman. I am going to talk about Franklin Barreto. And I know that this was supposed to be about guys who, like, you know, had dramatic – swings in value one way or the other, and that's not really what happened with Barreto, but at worst I think he held serve, because he made his way up full-time to AAA as a 21-year-old and hit 290, 339, 456 there. And while, you know, the stolen base totals aren't as impressive as they once were, he only stole 15 bags and he was thrown out eight times, so clearly something he has to work on. He was able to hit 15 homers at high A, and I think at triple A, excuse me. And I think he's a little bit more of a power threat than people give him credit for. I don't think he's going to be a perennial 25 homer guy, but, you know, I think he's going to be closer to 15 to 20 than he is the 10 to 12 range. So still a fairly raw prospect. He also struck out more than he usually has in triple A, but I'm counting it overall as a win, especially because Oakland has decided to, you know, try him at second base rather than the outfield. And at this time a year ago, we were not sure if he'd be transitioned into center field. So while that could still happen, it looks like he'll get a longer leash to try to stick in the middle infield.
Well, I'm gonna put it back on you, Ben, because I know it's a guy that you like and is not necessarily that different an overall profile from Barreto in terms of fantasy, and that's Jorge Mateo. I know we've talked about him a little bit before, but I think what he's shown, given the scenery change from once he went from High A to Double A and then over to Oakland, he's done nothing but hit again. I mean, how high are we talking about him on an off-season list at this point, potentially? Yeah. Obviously, we can't lock anyone in right now, but...
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that he's similar to Barreto and that, like, there's... For someone close to the majors, there's still a good amount of risk left.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think Mateo has a potential carrying tool that Barreto does not in speed.
Mm-hmm.
Because even while, you know... even while he's moved around a bunch this year... And at certain, you know, his OBP has been good, but not outstanding. But even so, he is flirting with, or no, has surpassed 50 stolen bases. So yeah. I think that's a bit of a differentiator. On the flip side, I'm a much bigger believer in Barreto's bat than I am in Mateo's.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, it's not the exact same profile, but I'm just trying to average
the two things out. No, yeah. And I agree with that. I mean, I would certainly still have Barreto higher, but I mean, to me, just based on the chance that, you know, people still underrate speed in fantasy baseball, especially today, there just aren't that many people who are stealing a ton of bases. So even if I think his probability is only medium low, the fact that Mateo is going to see MLB time next year probably and has that type of speed potential, I mean, I would probably have him in my top 30 to 40 range.
Yeah,
I think you could make the argument that he's a top 10 fantasy prospect. I don't think I'm going to make it, but there is an argument for it. And, you know, it's kind of two-pronged. It's one, it's the speed thing. Two, well, it's three-pronged, really. Two, it's what comes around it with Mateo now, because the concern about Mateo is that he, you know, wouldn't hit for really much power in his, he would be more like a 250 hitter. But if Mateo's a 270 hitter, which is seemingly more realistic, and he's a 12 homer guy, which also might be realistic.
He's got 12 this year.
He hit 12 this year. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Sure.
Oakland also has been playing him almost entirely at shortstop since he came up. I think the odds are better now than they were a year ago that he's going to stick on the infield, which does help his fantasy value as well. So I think everything is kind of trending in the right direction for him. I don't think we can kind of underestimate the value of what his speed could bring when it's not tampered down by everything else, like Billy Hamilton. I mean, Hamilton has more speed than Mateo, but, you know, Hamilton's value gets tamped down by the fact that he doesn't hit for power and he doesn't hit for average, and he's pretty much a two category guy. So, you know, Mateo at least has a chance to be more well rounded, even if he's not a 70 steal threat.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have this argument in a few months, but I would not put him near my top 10.
Yeah, no, I don't think I would either, but I think you could make the argument that with a great deal of risk, his upside could justify that.
Sure, which is why, you know, I said 30 to 40, maybe it's closer to 20 to 30, but that's already, in my eyes, a pretty big vote of confidence for his upside.
Sure, I guess my point being that I would argue his upside could exceed a top 10, and so even given the risk, that his upside could justify something in that vicinity. But yeah, I don't think I would either. It's a fringe case.
Yeah.
Rhett, do you want to throw out something on Beck, who I think is a really interesting guy, real quick?
Yeah, he's just, you know, people aren't – he's not someone people are talking about. He's not putting up big stats in the Arizona League. He's certainly not doing what Joe Adell is doing. But Beck is just – he's just dripping with tools as well. And, you know, he had a major injury in high school that he's possibly still feeling some lingering effects from. But But I think next year, if you're looking for a breakout guy in the system, he was their first round pick. So yes, you expect this, but Beck has the tools to be a breakout fantasy prospect.
I think the breakout is either Beck or Jesus Luzardo, who they got from the Nationals in the Doolittle deal. I think he's just an arm to watch. Probably more of a mid-rotation ceiling, but he's an interesting guy. I wouldn't necessarily go hard for him right now, but just a name to watch. And quick shout-out to AA outfielder/second baseman J.P. Sportman in the system for just existing. It's an incredible name.
He loves sports.
Yeah, he is a sportsman.
And, I don't want to get too political here, but finally a sports for man. Like,
yeah,
it's,
I agree.
It's just really about time.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So just shifting over to Texas, as we keep the train moving, Leody Taveras, I think, was the name everyone was watching this year to break out. I think he had a really good year. If you look at his stats, I don't think it's quite as impressive as the reports that we've gotten. Everything that I've seen and heard have said that he's really legit. He's going to be a prototype leadoff guy. The defense is obviously really good. I think he's going to stick in center for leagues that matters in. He doesn't strike out that much. He has a good approach at the plate, and he runs. I mean, I think he's just your prototypical leadoff prospect.
Yeah, I mean it's important to know he just turned 19 last week. So he played.
Crazy.
Just the fact that he played the entire season in the Sally League at 18 and didn't embarrass himself and fall down is a huge success. The fact that he actually showed glimpses of what he's capable of in the future is a portender of big things.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I guess the other news is Willie Calhoun, who we kind of talked about at the trade deadline, so we don't have to spend a ton of time on him, but he's up at the majors already. So
just 20, mash, dude.
I mean, 2015 fourth rounder, and he's in the majors at the end of 2017. It's kind of nuts.
And belongs.
And from a junior college, I should add.
Yeah.
Not even, you know, just as I've said on Twitter a couple times, that guy can fucking hit. That's really all it comes down to.
Yes, he can.
I mean, I threw Cole Reagans onto our sheet as a name. I think he might be the second best prospect in the system overall. He's really far away, though, and an arm. So probably more of a wait-and-see type thing right now. But the preliminary reports are pretty exciting.
Yeah. The other two arms worth mentioning, at least as far as much as arms are worth mentioning, Yoandy Mendez, you know, had people a lot more excited at the end of last year. He kind of just held serve in AA this year, which was not what everyone was hoping for. Given how young he is and he's, you know, he's going to be 22 when the season starts next year, it's still realistic that he could, you know, he could become a solid starter, but he's not going to be a frontline guy or a guy you really want to go after in fantasy. You know, he's essentially the polar opposite of Mike Matoella, who Matoella probably will never be useful for a fantasy owner. But if he is, he could be really good.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to health with him. I mean, when we've had people see him, and when they do, it's the reports are really good on this stuff. The other name that we would be remiss in not mentioning is Ronald Guzman. I think absolutely enhanced his value this year. Spent the full season at AA, hit .298, .372. .434. Obviously, you'd like to see a little more power out of your first baseman, but if he can hit .300, he's still only 22. He is 6'5". Like, he can work with a hitting instructor to add a little loft to his swing. He absolutely has the power. I mean, we've all seen him in person. He's a big guy. So I wouldn't necessarily preclude power from developing. He also, I mean, he has an amazingly short swing for a guy his size. He only struck out in 16% of his plate appearances this year, which is kind of nuts given that he has those long arms that he has. But I think he could potentially add some power down the line, and he's certainly gone from someone who is more of just, you know, someone you'd wait to monitor and see when he got called up to someone you might want to stash ahead of time this offseason.
Agreed.
So before we wrap up, I just want to go backwards for 1 second, because I feel like we spent a lot of time praising Adele earlier, and I'm wondering if that's going to make Enya jealous. Welcome back to episode 93 of Tino. We hope you use that break to discuss where you would rank Jorge Mateo in your offseason top 100. So with the slight sad AL West out of the way, we now move on to some more promising waters in the NL West. And we say that even knowing the Diamondbacks and Giants both exist, but the other three systems sort of make up for it. So going NL West, I don't think there's a better person to start with than with Craig.
Sure. Let's start in the desert, in where it is known to be barren. There's really only one name I think we're talking about in Arizona, and that's John Duplantier. I think it's ridiculous that J.D. Martinez landed in Arizona without him going the other way. I believe he was a third-round pick. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I might have that mixed up, but I think that's what he was.
He was a third-rounder, yeah.
Beautiful. He's always had stuff. Health has been the issue. He's been healthy this year, and he's been really actively good. I think the problem is, from a fantasy standpoint, he gets the dreaded mid-rotation tag, and given the health issues, he's someone who's probably, you know, if you're in a deep league that you know who Duplantier is, probably worth owning, but also probably worth throwing in a trade for someone who's a little more likely to stay healthy or help you in the short term.
Yeah, he might become the first pitcher from Rice to do anything in the majors in a decade.
Just,
you know who the last, you
incredibly
know
who the last rude to Wade Townsend.
Yeah, do you know who the last two pitchers from Rice to have positive WARPs as a starter are?
Jeff Niemann.
Yeah, I do know that.
God, I don't remember. Who else was it? Not Wade Townsend? Is that what you're telling me?
Not Wade Townsend never pitched in the majors.
So sad. Can I just say Anthony Rendon? Is that gonna?
Sure. I mean, he's wonderful.
Phil Humber.
Is Ooh. Philip Humber?
Wow.
Nice pull, Ben.
House.
I googled it.
Yeah. So. He's got history working against him, too. So there's that.
That's true. Umber Niemann, for those of you that don't remember, Umber Niemann and Townsend were all top 10 picks out of Rice in the same year, in 2004.
Yeah.
And they came after David Ardsma was in 2003. He was a first rounder out of Rice. Kenny Ball was a first rounder out of Rice in 2001. It has not been good to be a pitcher out of Rice, but Duplantier looks pretty good.
Hey man, Phil Humber pitched a perfect game. Put some respect on his name.
Yeah. I think that one perfect game counts for like half of his career WARP.
All right, Brett, do you want to take us to the mountains here?
Yeah, let's get the hell out of Arizona. All right, so I don't know how much there really is that's exciting to talk about in Colorado, at least from a change standpoint. You know, Brandon Rodgers, we've talked about a ton, and I still think he's great, but he hasn't done anything to warrant being the top fantasy prospect in baseball, and I think he's going to kind of settle for being, you know, in the top five and being very lauded and all of that stuff, and I think he'll probably end up in Colorado at some point. At some point next year, if he can stay healthy, but
and needs to tone down the aggressiveness a little bit.
A little bit, but I think he will.
I think his
raw talent plus cores is going to be wonderful for fantasy owners, but you all already knew that. Riley Pyne, who the fuck knows? One guy who I do want to talk about really quickly before I see if you guys want to talk about anyone in the Rocky system is Garrett Hampson, who has been the shortstop that has followed Brendan Rodgers in Lancaster this year. He stole 51 bases and hit .326, and that's exactly the player that Hampson is. He doesn't have any power. He's probably, even with Coors Field, I think he would be stretched to hit 10 home runs. But he is a solid contact hitter, and he's a smart and fast base runner. So in deeper leagues, he's a very interesting guy to keep an eye on. He was their third round pick back in 2016. Anyone else in the Rocky system you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, I would say Riley Pyne didn't really do what I think the community would have liked to see him do. It's obviously still early, but I believe he was kind of on the older side for a high school prospect. And he's almost 20 as a 2016 draftee. And I would like to see him miss more bats. He spent the whole season low A at 19, which is, that's fine. I mean, I'm not overly worried about the stats. He generated a ton of ground balls because his fastball has a ton of movement. But for a guy who throws 100 miles an hour in low A, you kind of expect more missed bats than he's getting, and he's walking far too many guys. This is going to be a long road, so not a huge deal, but I think probably not even as good as we would have thought, heading into the season.
Agreed.
Do we want to skip to San Francisco, where there's one guy to talk about before hitting the two heavy hitters here?
Yeah, why don't you?
You have to be the one, exactly. You have to be the one to talk about him.
All right. I mean, obviously, this was my guy heading into the draft, Helio Ramos. He's been better than I even thought he would be. I mean, this is a guy with potentially really big power. He's a really good athlete. And along with Joe Adele, he's one of those guys that was thought to be extremely raw. And then all of a sudden he shows up. And look, it's complex league ball. So it doesn't mean a ton in terms of production, but hit .348 for .645 and stole 10 bases, hit 6 home runs in 35 games. That's an explosive debut, and he's someone who I would not be surprised to see on our actual top 101, which means, yes, the Giants have a legitimate prospect. He's an absolutely legitimate fantasy prospect. But again, someone who showed up with more baseball skill than the community anticipated pre-draft. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him experience some bumps in the road, but he has the potential to be really damn good.
I adore the fact that Helio Ramos finished the season with an exactly .500 BABIP. Exactly.
Yeah, he hits the ball. Fucking nose. I mean, we had a prospect team member in the AZL, Matt Pullman, who saw him and will not stop raving about him. And look, he strikes out a ton. As we mentioned, he is raw despite his being more polished than anticipated. Almost a 32% strikeout rate in AZL. That's something that needs to be addressed in the long term. But in terms of just raw tools, he oozes them. And that's really exciting.
Yeah.
All right. So Ben, we've kind of shut you out so far. Do you wanna start in either San Diego or LA?
Yeah, I'll start in LA with a guy who I've always been a little bit higher on, and Craig, as someone who's a little bit more plugged into the scene, I'd like your opinion, because obviously I only have stats to go on and reports. I don't have much else. But I was definitely the high guy on Yusnail Diaz headed into the season. In the past, from a fantasy-only perspective, I'd sort of comped him to Melky Cabrera, a guy who might be average-driven, but with just enough in homers and steals to really make him like a pretty solid OF3 in his prime. And while I'm not saying he doesn't have that potential anymore, and while I do think he is younger than people realize because of when he came over, not a super, super inspiring year. He did hit 333 in AA, but didn't hit for much power or steal much this year. The strikeouts took a big jump up in AA. I do like that he's still walking, but I think overall, as just a dynasty league asset, he's taken, not a huge, but a small step back in my eyes. So I'm just wondering sort of, what you view Diaz as now, and if you think I'm wrong to sort of ease up on the gas pedal, or if I was just too heavy on it to begin with.
No, I mean, I think maybe a little bit too heavy to begin with. And I guess the one thing I would note, and I'm trying to find in his game log where he might have missed a little time, because he only played in 114 games, so I'm struggling to see when he was put on the DL. But I know Wilson Kerman mentioned that specifically, like, kind of after he missed some time and returned from a DL stint, he really took off. He made some swing changes, and that's kind of what led him to get promoted to AA at the end of the year. I mean, so since June, so if I just set the cutoff date as June, and I don't remember specifically when he came off the DL and kind of checked his swing, he had just about 70 games, 9 home runs. He hit 333, 386, 517. And so obviously you see the 517, he got popped back into his swing. Now, some of that is the Cal League, right? I mean, he played in Rancho Cucamonga. So you have to discount that. And power is not going to be his game that much. But 333, 386, that's relevant. And that includes time in AA as well. All of those numbers do. So I think it's worth mentioning just that he was a different player when he was healthy, and he showed the ability to make some changes just at AA. If we kick out the time in the Cal League, which is August 1st through the end of the year, 333, 390, 491. So he held most of those games going forward. Obviously, a relatively small sample. But so it's kind of a mixed bag of a season, which I agree. He was someone who potentially could have had a breakout year, and that definitely did not happen. So.
Yeah, I like Diaz too, and I don't think he's the guy who kind of lends himself to a breakout year. I think the Melky thing is still pretty apt. I think, if Diaz does what he's capable of, he is, he's a guy who could hit, 300 in the majors with, 12 homers, and probably not a ton of steals. He's 16 for 38 stealing bases in the minors, so he might, not want to do too much of that.
Even in that time when he was healthy, I think he was 6 for 15.
Yeah.
he's not a good base
no,
stealer.
No, it's pretty brutal, but that's why Melky Cabrera doesn't steal bases either. So, but yeah, I think as like a potential fourth outfielder. Not real life fourth outfielder, but fantasy fourth outfielder, I think he, could be a pretty reliable guy. The problem is where he fits in with LA, because they've got some talent in the majors and in the upper minors. So it'll probably work itself out, but he might have to wait a little bit longer than were he in another system.
Or end up elsewhere, yeah. I guess a name I'll throw out there is DJ Peters, who was playing alongside Diaz for much of the year and did just get promoted to AA to be in the playoffs. He's not a name I think most people knew really heading into the year. He was a fourth round pick in 2016, but already at AA. I mean, the speed with which these guys are hitting the upper minors is kind of insane, but he spent, like I said, the vast majority of the season at high A, 276, 372, 514. Yes, you can discount some of the power due to California League, as with Diaz, but I've been getting reports from Wilson Kerman on him all year long, and they're really positive. The tools are there for him to be something legit. I mean, he's a legitimate prospect, and it's probably someone who should be rostered in 20 teams. leagues and deeper, which again, yeah, that's very deep, obviously, but this was not someone on people's radar, I think, really at all entering the year. So he walks a bunch, he strikes out a bunch, but he's a really interesting bet, and I think there is power in the swing and enough to make him maybe another, you know, fourth outfielder in terms of fantasy long term.
Better than DJ Peterson, certainly.
Yeah. Oh, not even close. All right. I guess I'll touch on my man, another guy I've been a fan of for a little bit, but Kybert Ruiz. Yeah. switch hitting catcher. That sound familiar to anyone in terms of guys that I love a lot?
Blake Swihart.
Well, yes, that was a negative way to go. What if I said not white switch hitting catcher in terms of guys I love a lot?
Jared Saltalamacchia.
I hate you so much. no, I'm not saying Kybert Ruiz is Francisco Mejia, but they do share the switch hitting catcher mold in common. Ruiz is bigger than Mejia, which is probably a good thing in terms of withstanding the
rim. I was going to say, it's not hard to be bigger.
No, I know. I mean, yeah, we're all bigger than Mejia.
Extremely guilty. Yeah.
Yeah. But Ruiz played most of the year at low A, got a bump up to high A, kept hitting the whole time, almost never strikes out, was at 12% in low A, walked enough. He was at 7%. I mean, if you're only striking out that much, that's more than acceptable. Hit 317. I mean, that's this for a guy that's 19, he turned 19 2 months ago. So he started the year at 18. I mean, this is really impressive stuff. And the fact that he's a switch hitter is obviously very appealing. Look, catchers develop really weirdly, but this guy deserves a lot of attention given the low bar for catchers offensively and the raw tools that he displays. And I absolutely think he has the skills to stand out to stick at the catcher position long term.
Yeah, I'll bring up the more obvious guy just because I think we should at least talk about him for a minute. Who's Walker Buehler? He he kind of blew through the minors. His stuff is really, really good.
It's mid to upper 90s fastball. The curveball is incredibly good.
Yeah. The thing with Buehler is that it's still the same idea as the Buehler that we talked about at this point last year, except now we've just seen more of it in the minors and he's done it for a full season. There's still plenty of reliever risk with him, although it's getting lesser by the year. He's going to strike out a ton of guys, whether he's in the rotation or in the bullpen. So, there's a lot of starting pitchers in LA, and maybe that is, maybe that's the kind of thing that leads him to start in the bullpen for a little while. It's not a great comp, but I think a little bit about Carlos Martinez with Walker Buehler, where he's got the stuff to be so good out of the bullpen if they decide to use him in that role for a little while that he might not pitch himself out of the bullpen. Martinez did, but it was a little bit of a worry for a while. Buehler though has he has top 10 to 15 starting pitcher upside if he is a 200 inning pitcher, which albeit is not is very far from a sure thing, next year will tell us a little bit more about that than this year did, even though this year told us more than I think we thought it was going to tell us.
Walker Buehler to Carlos Martinez is just an outstanding interracial comp. One of the best we've had in quite some time.
I agree.
Thank you.
So speaking of interracial comps, Ben, Anderson Espinosa pitched as much this year as you did.
We get that all the time. It's weird that you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's something in the face, I think. Yeah.
It's he's an interesting exercise in, you know, as you've mentioned, I think Brett and I have made a conscious effort to try to be really aggressive on pitchers with number one or number two upside in recent years, because the payoff when you do hit on one of those players is just so much greater than as you sift through your mid-rotation starters. But sometimes it doesn't work, and it doesn't mean it's not going to work long-term with Espinoza, but, you know, sometimes when you really prioritize upside over probability for a kid who's that far away, you get stuck in limbo for 18 months, and that's pretty much where we are.
Yep. I'll go real quick. We've talked about Michael Baez a bit, but this is a guy, speaking of pitchers with, you know, number two upside. He has it. A lot's going to hinge on his developing a third pitch, but we have multiple eyewitness reports. I would advise people to check them out. But we've heard from industry scouts as well on him. It's a very legitimate high-end fastball. He's got a good changeup already. It's whether he's going to develop the breaking ball as well as, or well enough to remain in the rotation. But if he does, it's really high-end stuff. And if not, there's elite relief fallback option, which obviously gets said about a lot of guys. But he's another one of these 6-8 pitchers. It's upper 90s fastball, so given the length and the speed, it really gets on guys. He's someone, if no one in your league has him, get him now, because his stock in terms of valuation is going to go way, way up this offseason.
Yep. I'll stick with pitchers really quickly, and I will say that a dark horse for the best pitching prospect in baseball at this time next year is Mackenzie Gore. He is going to break out in a big way next year, and the Padres are aggressive with their players, so I'm really curious. He's going to be one of the prospects I watch more than anyone else in 2018. He was the best arm, you know, say what you want about Hunter Green, and he's, you know, we'll get to him when we get to the Central in the next episode, but Gore was the best pitcher in this draft, and I think he's going to prove it pretty quickly. So just a warning, be prepared.
Yeah. Ben, you have one other name?
I still like Jorge Ohna. He didn't, another guy who didn't have a breakout year, but definitely held his own in single A as a 20-year-old. Didn't strike out a crazy amount, and I think actually showed a little bit more on-base ability than I was anticipating. Nice mix of modest power and speed, nothing crazy yet, but still a guy I'm going to watch closely next year, and a guy that I'll probably fight to get on the very back end of the top 101 this offseason.
Yeah, I think the big thing with him is just if the power comes or not, because right. it kind of wasn't as impressive as kind of the reports were when he was signed. But as you mentioned, he's a young guy in full season ball. You know, that's going to happen. I just think the other name we obviously need to talk about in terms of drastically changing value is Fernando Tatis Jr. Tatito, as we call him around BP. He's a high end prospect. I mean, he's top 20 right now. I would think we're kind of batting around a list. I think he'll probably end up there in terms of non fantasy value. But he had a 2020 year in the Midwest League as a 18-year-old. That's insane.
Not only that, but he's in double A now.
And he's hitting. Yeah, and he's hitting.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that he's there is crazy. The fact that he had the season that he had in low A at 18, and a true 18, he's not going to turn 19 until 2018. His season is just bananas.
Yeah, it is hands down one of the most impressive minor league seasons that we've seen. I mean, we should point out he walked 14.5% at low A as an 18-year-old. And he slugged 500. Like, it's not like it was empty, you know, it was an empty on-base percentage or anything. Like, this, I don't have the words quite clearly, but look, if we're just telling you about him now, it's far too late. But if you play in really shallow leagues, or if you happen to listen to us while you play in redrafts for reasons that we can't tell you, as soon as he hits AAA, you're going to want to roster him, because this is a high end prospect.
I'm almost sad they didn't leave him in low A to finish out the season, because if he had walked five more times, he would have had more walks this year in low A as an 18-year-old than his dad had in his year in as his career high in walks.
Yeah, but on the upside, that when they promoted him out of low A, he had 69 RBI. So
that's nice.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I thought so.
I'm gonna go back to the pitching well quickly and talk about Adrian Morejon.
Okay. It's the last one, though. That's all we're giving you. You've mined the pitching well too much.
It is. So Morejon doesn't have the upside that someone like Gore has. I don't think he's going to be an ace. But in terms of combination of stuff and polish, I think he's going to move very quickly, and I think he's more than just a mid rotation starter. I think he does have eventual SP2 upside, especially in a National League park. I think he's going to have a strong year in 2018. I think he's going to build off of what he did this year, and get to the majors. You know, get to the majors as a. I think he could get there as a 20-year-old.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, I think that well is fully mined. as is done to all wells.
aside from digging, what's the verb?
What are you doing to the well is my question.
When you are removing water from it.
You're bucketing the well.
That's pumping. Okay. You pump from a well. Do you know?
Okay. Sure. I don't know.
But then why is the bucket there?
Do you think I spend a lot of time near wells?
No, what are you, poor? I don't spend a lot of time toward wells. I have fucking indoor.
You're acting like the expert on wells. What do I know?
I wonder if Enya's castle has indoor plumbing. Welcome back to episode 93 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please leave us reviews on iTunes.
But maybe not after
this. I think after we get... Yeah, no, maybe let us get another few back under our belt. Or if you're feeling generous, basically only leave us positive reviews is what we're getting.
Please.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Brett Sayer BP on Twitter. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in
circumventing divorce.
That's true. Goldstein. You can find our producer George at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening. Ask Craig what his wedding book signing thing says, and have a good night.
The Goldstein special.
God, I still just get happy remembering.
I can't believe it happened.
It really is just fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Ben's going to talk about Diaz. Kybert Ruiz is yeah, I George, you did that on Twitter, and I'm absolutely going to do it.
No one liked it. Literally no one.
I didn't actually like it, no, but yeah. I enjoyed it.
I figured you would. Good.
San Francisco, Ramos probably does, because he's got the same thing that Adele.
Yeah.
In terms of showing up and being better.
Helio Ramos?
Yep.
Great name.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to, like, you know, he was my guy.
He was.
And then, I mean, we need to talk about Tatis.
Hello.
Hey.